you look at taxes as taking money out of individuals' hands. I look at taxes as a way of paying for the community services, and that's how government works.
Taxes or no taxes? Debating the state's fiscal future in Juneau. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, with Medicaid expansion, looking for the chance to get back on track.
I'm barely functioning, but I'm functioning. And it would just take a lot of stress and tension off me if I did get approved.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
The state and oil companies continue to wrangle over terms for the proposed natural gas pipeline from the North Slope, but they have reached agreement on one thorny issue, at least for now: how much the gas line would pay in property taxes. The agreement also sets aside $800 million to pay for impacts on communities along the pipeline route. As KDLL's Shaylin Cochran reports, the goal is to avoid the decades of lawsuits that followed the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
For more than a year, a group called the Municipal Advisory Gas Project Review Board has been working to get to these numbers. $800 million on the front end of the AK LNG project to pay for things like road expansions and other expensive upgrades, and $16.5 billion for taxes over the life of the project. Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Mike Navarre is one of many city and borough mayors on the review board.
You know, I think they're fair numbers. It's a lot of it still depends on how they end up being allocated among the different communities and the state.
Now, we could use up this space simply entertaining all of the options the legislature has for allocating that money, but that still wouldn't get us very far. Governor Bill Walker has proposed the state take a 25% share of the project by buying out TransCanada. So who pays for what under that scenario?
If the state is a part owner of the project, is that portion of it exempted from taxation? And if so, does that reduce those numbers by 25%? And if so, does that come out of what would be the state share or the municipality share or both?
And when there's a lot of money on the table and no one else has much money because of declining oil prices, there will be lively debates over who gets how much out of that pot of money.
That's Larry Persily. He used to work for the federal government, keeping tabs on big oil and gas projects around the state. Now he's doing mostly the same thing for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. He says all of these discussions, taking place years before a decision will even be made about whether or not to build an in-state gas line, all stem from arguments of the past.
This is intended to avoid the fights that have gone all the way to the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, multiple times over what is the value of the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline and everything attached to it.
And that's why we've seen an opening bid, so to speak, of $16.5 billion for property taxes. Well, actually, that's a payment in lieu of taxes, or a PILT. If you took all of the pipe and the buildings and the equipment and the land needed to build and maintain an 800-mile natural gas pipeline and taxed it like regular property, well, the project would simply be too expensive. So $16.5 billion is what the negotiating parties have agreed to as an alternative.
So there'll be a formula based on production that will then be paid and distributed between the municipalities, such as the Kenai Peninsula Borough, where the plant is going to be located, the North Slope Borough, Fairbanks, Mat-Su Borough, Denali Borough, and the state, and that will continue for life of the project. What hasn't been decided, the state and municipalities still have to negotiate how it is going to be shared between the state and the boroughs.
There is clearly a lot more negotiation that will take place before we really know how much money communities can expect out of the project. And all of this is before the project sponsors have finished their report on the socioeconomic costs. That means schools, hospitals, police, and other services that might be needed during construction. That could also mean even more money in local coffers if the project gets the green light. But that decision isn't expected until sometime in 2018. In Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Juneau residents packed a ballroom yesterday to hear a panel of experts talk about Alaska's fiscal future. Fewer barrels and a growing budget deficit have some worrying that that could turn the state into an economic wasteland. But as KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins discovered, it might not be too late.
In the future, cities will become deserts, roads will become battlefields, and the hope of mankind will appear as a stranger.
Mad Max is a late 70s apocalyptic thriller. Oil has been depleted, which leads to financial chaos, famine, and roving biker gangs. Here in Alaska, fewer barrels of oil are being produced, and the price has dropped to just under $50 a barrel, about half of what it used to be. The state is expecting a deficit of $3 billion next year. And with deeper cuts, a loss of jobs and school funding.
It's not going to take 10 or 15 years. I think 2 or 3 years, you will see a noticeable drop in Alaska's population.
That's Larry Pursley. He spoke with a panel of three at Juneau's Forum on Alaska's Fiscal Future. Pursley worked for the Obama administration on Alaska's natural gas pipeline and now works for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. He said the proposed LNG pipeline offered a glimmer of hope that could add $1.2 billion a year into the budget.
But in and of itself, it is not going to solve our problem.
A big topic of conversation at the forum was the possibility of a state income or sales tax. But some of the panelists agreed a sales tax could be regressive and hurt struggling people. Brad Keithley, a consultant that focuses on oil, gas, and policy matters, said that's what adding state taxes would do.
Think about this for a second. If we're going into a recession, the last thing you want to do is reduce personal incomes, right? The last thing you want to do is take money out of the private economy, take money out of people's hands.
Pursley sees it differently.
You look at taxes as taking money out of individuals' hands. I look at taxes as a way of paying for the community services that benefit everybody. And that's how government works. That's how communities work.
Pursley said some people could afford a reduced PFD check or forgoing it altogether. I asked Josh Warren, an attendant at the forum, what he thought of that.
I've loved my PFD because I've gotten it every year since I was born here, but if that's what the state needs to be able to educate children, then I think that's okay.
Juneau has a 5% city sales tax. Places like Anchorage and Fairbanks don't. To help with the fiscal crisis, panelists devised municipalities to come up with solutions on their own. Brad Keithley said that meant thinking locally.
Because the state's not going to be coming, is not going to be riding over the hill to build the next school, to build the next AstroTurf football field, to build the next UAA athletic arena, to build the next state crime lab. They're not going to be riding over the hill to do that.
Nothing apocalyptic about that. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a building improvement project in Haines unearths a human skull.
As raptor curator, I never thought I would dig up human remains. So that was pretty interesting.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. And by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
As the design for Anchorage's contentious Northern Access project nears completion, the municipality's planning division is recommending the project be sent back to the drawing board. The proposed two lanes would connect Elmore Road with Bregras Street in the Anchorage UMed district. APRN's Josh Etch reports.
In the memo, the planning division says, quote, "It seems clear that the design of the preferred alignment is driven by funding constraints rather than by the context of the area and needs of all future users," end quote. Carolyn Ramsey is the chair of Citizens for Responsible Development, UMed, a group that opposes the road. She says the memo delves into the deficiencies of the road's current design,
including the trail complications to the Identera, the Anchorage, the Rondi dog sled races, the tour of Anchorage, the disconnect for any continuity for the ski trails, to wildlife passage. there's the wetlands concerns and future costs to the municipality.
Though the road would be a State Department of Transportation project with $20 million allocated by the legislature for construction, the municipality would be responsible for certain aspects of maintenance, like street sweeping, plowing, and landscaping. DOT would be responsible for upgrades and repaving. The state acknowledges that the $20 million funding amount limited design options. In the current plan, Department of Transportation spokesperson Shannon McCarthy says the department had to limit pedestrian bridges. One is planned near the northern end, and another potential bridge would be added to the southern end at a later date.
What we'd like to see in the future, perhaps, and this design does not preclude that, is perhaps an additional roundabout in a separated pathway. Right now, this has bike lanes on both sides of the road, plus 10-foot sidewalks on both. And a separated pathway will be an alternate, but it looks like this is what we can afford at this time.
The Muni's criteria requires the road to have its pedestrian pathways separated from the road by at least 10 feet. Carolyn Ramsey says area community councils have been opposed to the road for years, and the budget-constrained design plus the planning division's memo have reinforced many of their concerns, particularly those regarding safety, with an estimated 10,000 vehicles rolling through the area each day for the first year.
This is dangerous for our children when there's absolutely no mitigation methods put into place to help either slow that traffic down or get our kids safely across the road with East High and Russian Jack School on the other side and the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School down at the other end. So these are all big concerns, and we value our community, our neighborhoods, our children, and we value our municipality and don't want to see any more money going out the door than we need to.
The safety issues, along with others about the road's impact on the surrounding wetlands, wildlife, recreation in the area, and a constrained budget, make the current design unacceptable to groups like Ramsey's. The two major hospitals and two universities are strongly in favor of the road. Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz plans to get representatives on both sides of the issue together for further discussion to see if any common ground can be reached. The municipality's Director of Economic and Community Development, Chris Schutte, spoke on behalf of the mayor.
What's important to Mayor Berkowitz is that he have the ability to do some additional due diligence in looking at the project to ensure that if the project is to go forward, that it is a project that actually meets the regional transportation demands, but not at the expense of providing the road type or road design that's required for the area.
There's no exact timeline on when the two sides might meet. The current design is nearing completion and is due to be evaluated by Anchorage's Planning and Zoning Commission. It will be up for discussion Monday alongside the Planning Division's memo, which recommends the project be redesigned and construction postponed until funding is available to ensure the road is appropriate for the area. Calls to the Municipal Planning Division were not returned by deadline. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
For a link to the Planning Division's memo, go to our website, alaskapublic.org. As of today, Alaskans have been able to sign up for Medicaid expansion for 1 month. Nearly 2,000 people have enrolled during that time. APRN's Annie Fite talked to an Anchorage resident who says the program has the potential to change his life, and a doctor who is thrilled to have better health care options for his patients.
Kenneth Taylor sets 10 pill bottles down on a desk in front of me.
This is what I take on a daily.
Taylor has two types of cancer in his kidney and his prostate. He's also trying to manage several chronic conditions.
I have high blood pressure, diabetes, sleep apnea, asthma.
Taylor used to be on disability, but then he got caught selling cocaine. He went to prison for almost 3 years and lost his benefits. Now he lives in a halfway house called New Life Development, where he works as a cook part-time to help pay for the crowded room he shares with another resident. He needs health care, but has no way to pay for insurance with his weekly paycheck of about $300. Before Medicaid expansion, Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center and their sliding fee system was Taylor's only real option for care.
I'm barely functioning, but I'm functioning.
And it would just take a lot of stress and tension off me if I did get approved for Obamacare, for the simple fact that all day I think about how I'm going to pay this bill. How am I going to pay? How am I going to get this medication? How am I going to get this one?
So during the first week of September, Taylor signed up for Medicaid expansion with help from an enrollment specialist at the health center. He hasn't received his benefits card in the mail yet, but once he does, even his appointments in September will be covered. For Taylor, the chance to access specialty care again, to check if his kidney cancer is still in remission, is a huge relief. His doctor feels the same way. Jonathan Casarella is a family practice doctor who has worked at Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center for the past 2 years. He says before Medicaid expansion, he frequently had to tell patients they needed more advanced care he couldn't provide.
A very common conversation that I would have on a daily basis would be, you need further treatment that I can't provide for you for your condition. It's a serious condition, and I need to refer you to see another provider. They would respond that they can't afford it, and so they would just have to do without.
Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center estimates about 4,000 of its patients are eligible for Medicaid expansion. Casarella says getting them enrolled can help transform their lives. He says many of his patients have untreated or minimally treated conditions that prevent them from working.
And they're living off what they can afford and whatever support systems are available, whether through family members or through the government. And to be able to get care for these patients, for them to be able to get the health care they need, they're going to be able to go back to work.
Kenneth Taylor's goal is to stay clean.
All right, we'll do the breathalyzer right now.
He's been in and out of prison since 1985, and now he's determined to stay out.
Welcome to SoberLink. Submit. Blue light flashes. Also, it takes a picture of you when you do it to make sure it's you doing the breathalyzer.
Taylor says having good health care will give him some peace of mind as he works to get his health and his life back on track. In his words, it will give him a chance to do good instead of doing bad. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Raven Alaska, providing business travel needs in over 100 communities across the state. Find more at flyraven.com.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Human remains were found in a pile of dirt on Monday afternoon in Haines. Employees at the American Bald Eagle Foundation were working on improving accommodations for raptors residing there when they unearthed part of a skull. An initial local assessment revealed the remains are at least a few hundred years old and are that of a Native American woman. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has more.
Earlier this week, Chloe Goodson, the raptor curator at the Eagle Foundation, got quite the surprise while working outside on the property.
We were shoveling away. It was just three of us. There was myself, another staff member, and an intern. And suddenly we struck something that wasn't quite breaking apart. And we were sort of wondering, like, what is this object? One person said, is that like a coconut? Another person, like, is that like a clay pot or something? This is really weird. We looked inside. One of the interns said she could, like, see, like, traces of, like, where blood vessels were. So we were thinking, like, what kind of animal was this at some point? So we turned it around. Then we came face to face with what was a human skull. You could see, like, the top of the ridges for the eyes, and then part of the bridge of the nose was still there, like, between the eyes.
Goodson says the dirt pile was delivered from a site at 6.5 Mile Haines Highway. They were working to convert two sheds into aviaries for the raptors.
Everyone was pretty much just in shock, eyes wide, jaws dropped.
She says they stood there in utter astonishment for a moment before alerting Foundation Director Cheryl McRoberts and calling the police. Interim Police Chief Robert Griffith says the police are working with local tribal organizations.
We have a human skull that was found that's an ancient artifact.
So we're coordinating the excavation of that site with, in collaboration and cooperation with both of our tribes in town.
Haines police responded and initiated an investigation Monday afternoon. Griffith says local anthropologist Anastasia Wiley examined the artifact and determined the remains are those of a female Native American, at least 40 years of age, and most likely date from before the 1700s. Griffith says the state medical examiner's office is looking at photographs of the skull. When the origin and age of the remains are determined, it will return to ancestors in the area for a traditional burial.
If it's truly an antiquity, and we believe it is based on our limited knowledge of it, then the medical examiner would simply turn it back over to us to release to, quote, the family. And in this case, the family would be their descendants, which would be the local Native organizations.
When police arrived, they found another small piece of bone in the pile. Goodson says watching the anthropologist examine the skull and make her observations was fascinating.
She just like came to the conclusion of like, oh, older, possibly female, Native American, before 1700s, and she just went into all of the explanation for that, and it was just really impressive.
Goodson says she volunteered to help go through the dirt pile with Wiley and other volunteers this weekend.
When I took the job as raptor curator, I never thought I would dig up human remains. So that was pretty interesting.
The site at 6.5 Mile will be excavated to see if there are any other remains in the area. Reporting in Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
The Association of Village Council Presidents has elected a woman for the first time as a second traditional chief. Her name is Bea Kristovich. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
I think I'm still in shock.
With the AVCP 51st Annual Convention pushing late into the night Wednesday, the association delegates elected Kristovich second tribal chief.
Women were always left out over the years. The men were the leaders. But over the years, there's been more people, more ladies or women, getting more active, going into active roles as leaders from the villages. And they're still silent, but I think being the first one, it'll show these other younger generation that they can do it.
AVCP is a nonprofit tribal corporation for 56 Native villages throughout Alaska's Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The traditional chief acts as a figurehead, opening meetings, saying prayers, and offering traditional knowledge. But Kristovich, who belongs to the Native village of Napaimute, wants to do more. As chief, Kristovich says she wants to encourage leaders to speak openly. To do that, they'll have to challenge their cultural upbringing.
We weren't raised that way, to be open or talk about people or argue and stuff like that.
She also says she wants older leaders to retire so younger leaders can step forward to learn tribal issues.
And I want them to be united. You know, there's 56 villages and we're still separated by Yukon, Kuskokwim, and our area. And I think that if we're all united, we'd be so strong, we'd be able, if we could stick together and fight for issues that are very important for our people and our villages, it would work.
Kristovich has been working for Native issues and education for over 40 years. She helped work towards ANCSA and served on the state school board. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Students at the University of Alaska Southeast will recognize Indigenous Peoples Day on October 12th, a day otherwise known as Columbus Day. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, the student government recently passed a resolution to do this on the second Monday of every October.
David Russell Jensen is a third-year student at University of Alaska Southeast. He's a member of the student government and co-sponsored the resolution.
I had an essay assigned to me in high school about whether or not we should even celebrate Columbus Day, and so I think that's where some of my thoughts came about why we shouldn't celebrate it.
Growing up in Juneau, he says Columbus Day has never been a big deal, but he knows it's still recognized in other parts of the country.
They do like Columbus Day sales, I guess. I know that's kind of weird, but does that just mean like you walk into a store and just steal whatever you want? I mean...
For Russell Jensen, Christopher Columbus represents the beginning of colonization and the genocide of indigenous people, not the discovery of America. He got the idea to bring the resolution forward from Seattle. Its city council unanimously voted to rename Columbus Day as Indigenous Peoples Day last year. Minneapolis did it beforehand. Berkeley, California has been recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day since the 1990s. The state of Alaska and the university system do not recognize Columbus Day as an official holiday. But Russell Jensen says we're all a product of colonization.
We're all results of genocide and language loss. I mean, I'm speaking English, you know, that's kind of weird. You know, I mean, 100 years ago, I'd probably be speaking three different languages if I lived here.
He hopes the resolution continues the dialogue UAS is already having. Russell Jensen is a Tlingit language student and says the college is playing an important role in revitalizing Alaska Native languages.
UAS is doing some really amazing things about the importance of Indigenous languages and culture. So I know that this isn't going to be one day on the calendar where, oh, we're done. You know, it's not going to be like that.
But Russell Jensen thinks UAS can still do better. He wants to see more Alaska Native teachers. Of the 102 full-time faculty at UAS, only three are Alaska Native. Chancellor Rick Caulfield says that's something the college is focusing on through a new diversity action committee. He says UAS is continually looking at ways to expand educational opportunities around Alaska Native culture.
It is something that I believe is important for all Alaskans, and I think to the extent that UAS is located in the homeland of the Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian peoples, that we have an obligation to provide education to include the languages and cultures of the peoples in this ancestral homeland.
UAS currently offers Alaska Native Languages and Studies as a minor or as an emphasis in a liberal arts degree. Caulfield says university faculty are discussing the possibility of turning it into its own degree program. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Elizabeth Jenkins and Lisa Fu in Juneau, Josh Edge in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, and Jillian Rogers in Haines. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Gokey is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.